top of the hour news. As it happens, when it happens, wherever it happens, local, regional, and global, only on Q95, the big station, Q95DA.com. Right on cue.
This is the Prime Evening News for today, Thursday, March 21st, in the headlines. Former IMF financial economist and United Workers' Party leader Dr. Thompson Fontaine laments the DLP regime refused to invest CBI revenues in sustainable local natural resource-based industries when these funds will flow in.
Station Q95.
The UN reiterated at countries Wednesday that people fleeing the spiraling violence in Haiti should be granted a refugee protection and not be forcibly returned. And Leo Varanka said he will step down as Ireland's Prime Minister in a surprise move, saying the country's coalition government would stand a better chance of re-election under another leader.
Regional
details coming up next.
Q95, the big station. Q95DA.com. Right on cue.
Former IMF financial economist and United Workers' Party leader Dr. Thompson Fontaine laments that many of the recommendations being demanded by the EU government and now reportedly being implemented by the Skerrit administration could have been implemented years ago as the opposition parties had given these same recommendations to the DLP regime years before the EU's intervention. Such proactive action is managing the CBI program and investments in the proceeds in the economic pillars of the local economy would have resulted in a stronger, sustainable and resilient natural resource-based economy and would have left a more respectable image on Dominica in the international community. However, to date, Dominica, along with a few other Caribbean territories that operate a CBI program, have been publicly humiliated and forced to properly restructure the management and increase transparency about the program.
Because this government has failed to develop the productive sectors of the economy, we have the issues that we're having. So they failed to invest in agriculture, for example. They failed to put the farmers on their feet. They failed to invest. I remember one time the government promised to have two boats, one from the north, one from the south. You know, empty promises. They never revived the agriculture sector. They never got on any sustained replanting activity, whether to replant bananas or coconuts or nothing, or citrus. So they have not invested in agriculture for one thing, which is the mainstay of the economy. So if you're talking about stability, you're talking about pillars of the economy that can help sustain you so that in difficult times you are sustained. If those pillars are rotted or if those pillars are not solid, then the economy is wobbly. It increases the number of persons, for example, who now depend upon a handout from government. So now we have a number of persons who at one time were productive in society, who would be employed within the agriculture sector or within the construction sector. These individuals now find themselves depending upon the government largesse. Now it is okay when there is government, but as we are coming into a situation where that is all going away, then you're going to have more instability, you're going to have more problems because those pillars have not been established.
And that was United Workers' Party leader and financial economist Dr. Thompson Fontaine. Prime Minister Roosevelt Skerrit has provided an update on his administration's response to the request from the EU governments regarding maintaining Dominica's visa-free status to the Schengen region. He claims that his administration is now implementing the security measures advised by the EU governments to improve the security and transparency of Dominica's CBI program. He further claimed that following the meeting of EU representatives earlier this year, his administration made several corrections to its management of the Citizenship by Investment program to ensure good standing with its international partners.
With regards to the question on the European Union and the recent pronouncements by the EU with regards to its visa-free regime for countries who have visa-free access to the Schengen states, and more particularly with regards to countries with citizenship by investment programs. Now, as you know, there are countries within the Caribbean, with the OECS, who have these programs, Dominica, Antigua, St. Kitts and Nevis, St. Lucia, Grenada, have these programs. Obviously, there are the concerns have been raised by these countries, the EU bloc, with regards to this program starting first with countries within the EU with such programs, and the need for all of us to take certain actions to set aside the concerns which the EU in particular would have had in respect to those programs and the potential risk that they have stated that these programs could cause to their countries. We've been in touch with the EU. As you know, earlier this year in January, the EU delegation came here. The head of the visa policy unit of the European Union was in Dominica along with a delegation to engage us in discussions. Dominica has taken some very comprehensive measures to allay and to set aside the concerns of the European Union and other partners who we are engaging on this matter.
Mr. Skirt revealed that other territories that operate a CBI program like St. Lucia, Antigua, Grenada, St. Kitts and Nevis have met with Dominica and finalized a memorandum of understanding, which will see a more transparent and secure CBI program to prevent any slip-ups in security and malpractice in managing the revenue generated from the program.
The countries within the OECS who have these programs we have met jointly, and we've agreed to take some joint actions, some of which will be not limited to but include having the same legislation to deliver our programs, to ensure that the application forms are uniform, to ensure that all our due diligence processes are the same, to ensure that there is more sharing of information among ourselves with regards to the program, and also looking at setting a minimum price structure for our programs so that nobody will be able to go below a particular fixed rate. So all of these things that we have negotiated among ourselves, I have actually signed this memorandum of agreement I sent this morning, having concluded the discussions with the other partners, and we are with others to sign on this. I believe that this agreement will place us, in all of us, in a much stronger position in terms of our response to the concerns which the EU would have raised. Other concerns which the EU would have had, for example, the changing of names. In Dominica's case, we have dramatically dealt with this. And so it's an evolving process. We are not indifferent to the concerns raised by the European Union, but we are satisfied and confident that we have taken the necessary actions in response to the concerns raised by the European Union.
Mr. Skirt stated that his office provided the EU government with a copy of the amended legislation, which was passed in December 2023 and contains the initial recommendations for managing the CBI program. He added that his team is now awaiting feedback and/or additional recommendations from the EU government regarding improvements for the management of Dominica's CBI program. During the opening of a multi-stakeholder roundtable discussion on forestry management earlier today, Environment Minister Kozia Frederick emphasized the significance of citizens' involvement in environmental protection, despite existing laws safeguarding specific areas of Dominica. He highlighted the balance between infrastructure and national development, noting the potential intrusion into natural habitats and the importance of citizens' efforts in mitigating environmental impacts.
We appear to be the invaders of nature. And so while we invade in nature and doing our development for raising monies, for being able to survive in an ever-changing global environment, we have to play our part. We have to play our part to really work to help nature. So we have to help to nurture nature. And it's an important thing that we have to do as citizens of our country. And I will say it again, because this country has been this way for many years because of the bloodshed over generations of people who came before us. And we recognize that one of the best resources we have on our island is the forest. It is the lungs of the world itself. And we do have, by law, selected areas of lands that are protected. But it's also important that as citizens, we play our part to ensure that these demarcated areas are not encroached upon, that we continue to grow these areas. Because even while we survive, you know, we are safeguarding the forest, there are many brothers who depend on the forest for survival. And we may, throughout the conversation, want to suggest or encourage them to find alternate livelihood while they continue to. Because if a a gentleman in the Carilago territory is depending on the Gambier to do a canoe for his survival. How dear me, as a minister, do not harvest that lumber if I do not provide him with an alternative. And so it has to be a balance as we continue to get the benefits of what we now know as Nature Island.
Frederick also noted the timelines of this year's Forest Week observance theme, Forest and Innovation, during which he emphasized the importance of leveraging technology to explore beyond visible horizon and expand possibilities.
Now, there are many efforts over the years that involves the work we do in forestry. And it's in 2024, it's a timely theme, forestry and innovation, because we have to move beyond what we see for eye and what we could do with the technology that surrounds. And so it's a good time in our history to use all of the trappings of information technology to capture what, in a sense, is our forest. So I'm really happy as a minister to lead that charge. We know, for example, we have a researcher here, that biotechnology is important. It is a source of diverse biological resources that inspires technological change, and it will lead to new medicines, biofuels, etc. Within the forest itself, there are a lot of sustainable materials, and so there will be innovations with eco-friendly materials like the bamboo and the laroma, which we use for the arts and craft, which could be used as alternatives in the construction industry. And we know for a fact that the forest mitigates against climate change. It's a major carbon sink.
Minister for the Environment, Kuzia Frederick. In a landmark collaboration, the Clarence Fitzroy Bryant College and Green Solutions International SKN Incorporated have unveiled plans to launch the Caribbean Center for Excellence in Research, Innovation and Workforce Training, scheduled for inauguration on April 9 for 2024. This pioneering venture aims to position St. Kitts and the wider Caribbean region as leaders in sustainable innovation and skills workforce development. The center, dedicated to solar photovoltaic installation and electric vehicle maintenance and repairs, will be integrated into CFBC's Technical Vocational Education and Management Studies Division. The project will kick off with a six-week train-the-trainer workshop, comprising 5 weeks of online self-paced learning and a one-week hands-on practical component. As the primary regional hub for comprehensive PV and EV training, the center addresses a significant gap in the Eastern Caribbean's renewable energy landscape. Funded by the Jeff Small Grants Program, the training will be initially offered free of charge to build CFBC's capacity for sustaining the project. The formalization of the partnership between CFBC and GSI occurred through a memorandum of understanding signed on November 20th, 2023. During the unveiling ceremony of the billboard honoring the Jaco Flats attraction site, Damien Dublin, chairman of the Dominica Reparations Committee, shed light on Jaco's significant role in the evolution of slavery. He emphasized the importance of acknowledging that African history extends beyond the slavery era, highlighting the extensive of the mighty kingdoms in the continent.
This day is historic, folks, an important day, because we're standing in a place where talking about somebody who came from Africa, and you have to understand Jaco was no ordinary man. Jaco was a chief in Africa, so organized society. And we need to know that history of Africa did not start with slavery. That's what they made. You know, all of us went to school and on the history books, everything started from slavery. But before slavery, there were mighty, mighty kingdoms, well organized, well civilized. So when Western powers tried to change the narrative and make us think that they came to civilize us. But when they came, they made civilization, they made structured societies, which they basically dismantled because of economic reasons. So this moment is broad. Just imagine a man coming from Africa, going through all the horrors he went through, landing here, surviving, and we have spirits of resistance. You have to understand that the Africans, the enslaved Africans, always resisted. Some may want to paint a different picture and say, well, only South African chiefs connived, but they resisted in Africa, they resisted on the boat. Some of them, rather than be enslaved, they jump over. Like a serious issue, they decide, nah, I don't want to become conquered or enslaved, I prefer jump overboard and take my life. You go through all that, learning in Dominica, That barracoon building is such an important building, and we from the Reparations Committee have made representation that this building should be restored to its historical significance.
Dublin also underscored that despite the myriad challenges endured by individuals during the slavery era, they found ways to celebrate and embrace the significance of their culture and heritage.
Maybe one or two of the only ones in the Caribbean. That's where when the enslaved Africans, and I'm deliberately using enslaved Africans because I want us to move from that narrative of slave, that the mentality of a slave is enslaved Africans. They didn't come there willingly. And that's the terminology we are trying to get into. Landing in the barracoon, taking care of oil, prepared, brought them to the old Mackay Plaza is another historic place with historical significance. Oil up, put on sale, went to the plantation, and the resistance continued on the plantation. Then they ran away, Taco was one of them, Balai, a whole lot of them. And the important thing is, in spite of all what they went through, they were able to leave remnants of their culture and way of life. Independence time, we dance belly, we do things. These are African cultures, certain foods we eat, certain herbs we prepare them, certain parts in Africa, it's the same. You have to be a mighty race to go through all that, work from sun up to sundown, and still able to leave your legacy the way I enjoy. So I want us to know that today, important day, from the Reparations Committee of Dominica, National Reparations Committees in the Islands, and the CARICOM Reparations Commission, because that is one of the things that happened in all the islands, recognition.
And that was Dominica Reparations Committee Chairman Damien Dublin. Sergeant David Andrew Jr., the newly elected chairman of the Police Welfare Association, has announced a dedicated focus on addressing the multitude of challenges confronting police officers, and particularly the pressing issue of salary increases in the face of serious economic challenges. He expressed a commitment to collaborate with the newly appointed executive team to formulate a proposal to be presented to the government on behalf of police officers.
I must say I'm elated to serve the members of the Police Welfare Association, to serve on the executive as chairman. It will be a challenging time, but I want to thank the executive for selecting me, and I will do my best to bring forward their issues and see how it can be addressed. First thing on the front burner, there is issues of the cost of living for our members. And the members have been asking that for salary increase, we intend to put a proposal together, the executive, the soonest, and to table it before the government. There are also issues with the conditions at stations and the lack of resources to do the work. I know it's a difficult time and we have some global financial issues. However, for the police to be effective, they must have the necessary resources in order to function properly.
As the newly elected chairman, Sergeant David Andrew Jr. has articulated his commitment to collaborating closely with the police administration in pursuit of the objectives outlined by the Commissioner of Police.
My intention as the chairman is to work with the police administration to achieving the goals set by the Commissioner of Police. I can tell you we have a very good Commissioner of Police acting. He has been working closely with the Police Welfare Association, and I intend to continue that trend. As the time goes by, we are going to meet with our membership. We're also going to have some executive meetings and meet with the police administration to put things together to see how we can greater develop the police force, the human resource, improve training, and also deliver better and adequate service to the public, because you must look at your response to the public. That is critical. And to ensure that there's a public confidence within the police force. So that is our intention, not only welfare as it relates to our membership, but also as it relates to the community as a whole.
Newly elected chairman of the Dominica Police Welfare Association, Sergeant David Andrew Jr., In other news, the United Nations reiterated to countries Wednesday that people fleeing the spiraling violence in Haiti should be granted refugee protection and not be forcibly returned. The UN Refugee Agency issued a new legal guidance to ensure that Haitians most at risk are protected and growing concerns of mass displacement. Elizabeth Tan, head of the United Nations Human Rights Agency International Protection Division, said in a statement that Haitians' lives, safety, and freedom are threatened by the confluence of skyrocketing gang violence and human rights violations. The agency, she said, wanted to remind states of the imperative to ensure Haitians who may need international refugee protection receive it. The United Nations has reiterated a call to all states to not forcibly return people to Haiti, including those who have had their asylum claims rejected. In its new guidance, the United Nations Human Rights Agency noted that a broad range of categories of people in Haiti could have a right to protection under the 1951 Refugee Convention. It said Haiti, who should be deemed eligible for refugee protection, may include political activists, journalists, judges, lawyers, and others fighting corruption and crime, among other risk profiles. And Leo Varadkar made a surprise announcement on Wednesday, revealing his decision to resign as Ireland's Prime Minister. He expressed the belief that the coalition government would have a stronger chance of being re-elected under a different leader. Varadkar's Fine Gael party will commence the nomination process for a new leader on Thursday, with the outcome scheduled to be disclosed on April 5th.
So I am resigning as President and Leader of Fine Gael effective today, and will resign as Taoiseach as soon as my successor is able to take up that office.
Varadkar said on Wednesday he would step down as Ireland's Prime Minister and the leader of the governing Fine Gael party. In a hastily arranged news conference outside government buildings in Dublin, he said there is no real reason behind his surprise departure.
I have nothing else lined up. I have nothing in mind. I have no definite personal or political plans.
Varadkar's surprise departure as head of the three-party coalition between Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil and the Green Party does not automatically trigger a general election. He said he had asked for a new leader of the party to be elected ahead of Fine Gael's annual conference on April 6. The parliament will then vote on that person becoming prime minister after the Easter break. Varadkar added that the new leader may be better placed than him to achieve a victory in the next election, which must be held by March 2025.
But after careful consideration and some soul-searching, I believe that a new Taoiseach and a new leader will be better placed than me to achieve that.
His successor will have about 12 months to try to claw back the wide opinion poll lead the main opposition Sinn Féin party have over both Fine Gael and their main coalition partner Fianna Fáil. Polls suggest the current coalition also stands a chance of being re-elected. The leaders of Varadkar's coalition partners said they were surprised when he let them know of his plans at a regular weekly meeting on Tuesday. Varadkar became the first gay prime minister of the once staunchly Catholic country in 2017. He is also the youngest person to hold the office. Varadkar's government has overseen a sharp economic recovery from the COVID-19 pandemic, but has struggled to tackle a decade-long housing crisis.
That's the Prime Evening News, and here's a recap of the headlines. Former IMF financial economist and United Workers' Party leader Dr. Thomson Fontaine laments the DLP regime refused to invest CBI revenues in sustainable local natural resource-based industries when these funds were flowing.
Right on cue.
The United Nations reiterated to countries Wednesday that people fleeing the spiraling violence in Haiti should be granted refugee protection and not be forcibly returned. And Leo Varadkar has said he will step down as Ireland's Prime Minister in a surprise move,
wherever it happens,
saying the country's coalition government would stand a better chance of re-election under another leader.
Q95DA.
I've been your presenter, Fidison Valmond.
Q95. top of the hour news. As it happens, when it happens, wherever it happens, local, regional, and